Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. My name's Rich Spate and I'm joined down the line this evening by Mark Isles, the chief football writer with the Bolton News and the host of the Buff podcast. And we're going to be previewing the upcoming game at the Stadium of Light on Saturday between Sunderland AFC and Bolton Wanderers. So how are you this evening, Mark?
Absolutely fantastic. All the best for speaking to you.
I have to say I had a listen to your podcast earlier. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. It's very different from most of the podcasts that I listen to from other football clubs. So well done with that. It's a really good listen.
Yeah, we try and have a laugh. I mean, if you can't have a laugh at Bolton Wanderers right now, when compared to the last few years, then when can we have a laugh? Let's be honest.
Well, yeah, I mean that's where I want to start. Really, it seems from the tone of your podcast, from some of the articles I've read that you've written, that things are on the up, really, and life back in League One for Bolton and Bolton fans is looking pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was kind of half the reason for doing the podcast, is that we found ourselves in a place where it had been doom and gloom for 2-3 years solid, and suddenly we found ourselves in this place where suddenly it was better to be covering the club, it was better to be talking about the club. We had all these kind of positive things that were going on, and yes, we kind of dropped into League Two at the time, but there was a sense with the new ownership at the club that things were just on the up, and you know, there were good people in charge at the club again, and the manager had this kind of fresh, you know, modern outlook on football, and whilst there was so much, you know, shite going on all over the world, and we were all locked down, it was horrible. Actually, you know, there was this thing to cling on to, and Bolton Wanderers were playing good football and winning games again.
And I mean, that's one thing I wanted to touch on all the way through this recording, really, is I think there's some real clear parallels between what's been going on at Bolton over the last couple of years and what's been going on at Sunderland over the last kind of 9 months or so since we've been taken over, in that there's this complete kind of turnaround. You're now playing a different brand of football, not your kind of traditional Bolton Wanderers direct play the club's probably very famous for from back in the early 2000s more than anything, but also under Phil Parkinson, dare we mention his name. You've got Ian Everett in charge, former Barrow manager, and he seems to play a really good brand of football, exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's chalk and cheese. I mean, I won't have a word said against Parky, by the way. I'll defend him to the hilt as far as Bolton Wanderers are concerned, but there is no question that the football was dire and it was hard to watch at times. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to disagree with you one single syllable there. But no, I mean, you're right. And Bolton, you know, have had a direct game in the past. And this is so such a departure from what we have had. It's very much Manchester City-esque. They get quite a lot of comparisons drawn. A lot of them by Ian Everett, I might add, but a lot of comparisons drawn with City and this kind of open, expansive possession play. And it's great to watch. It really is. It's suddenly a joy to watch Bolton Wanderers again. And it was great when fans finally came back and started seeing the same thing that I'd been seeing for 12 months prior, you know, sat me Todd in a press box. Suddenly people are actually enjoying going to the game again. And even, dare I say it, even if they're not winning games, at least they're being entertained, and that is a big thing, I think. And the crowds are coming back, and the, you know, these stay away fans that have maybe had a few years of saying swearing off the club and finding something different to do are suddenly thinking, oh, you know, I might go down and watch the game because I know I'm going to enjoy it.
So there was a bit of a deal on at the weekend, wasn't there? Was it a tenner to get in for adults and
yeah,
a bit less for kids? And did that bring people through the doors?
Oh, yeah, I think they got just over 20,000, nearly 21,000, which is very good. I think it was something like the seventh or eighth best crowd they'd had at this level of football, which they've not really played below the top two divisions very often, you know, if truth be told. But, yeah, it was very reasonable. Of course, you know, Sod's Law would state that they got beat. So, you know, if there were new fans coming through the door, then, you know, maybe a couple of them thought, no, we'll sod this for a game of soldiers. We'll go shopping at Middlebrook instead. But, no, it was a good day, and they, honestly, there is a better vibe, and you'll be feeling it at Sunderland too. I'm sure that when you get this kind of new ownership, and suddenly, you know, there just seems the sky's the limit. You know, it feels like there's a momentum there, and suddenly you can forgive the sins of the past, because you know, in fairness, you know, Sunderland have probably looked like a bad championship team trying to play League One football for a few years now. Now all of a sudden they look like a very good League One team full of players that might just get you through that door.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good assessment, actually. And it's a really good way of looking at it. A bad championship team playing League One football. Now we're quite confident that you know, if we get through in the League Cup, well, recording just before the match starts, that you know, if we get drawn against a championship club or even a bottom half of the Premier League club, we'll give them a hell of a game, the style of football we're playing right now. And it sounds a little bit like Bolton would do something similar. I was interested to get your take on the kind of the incomings and outgoings over the summer, because obviously there's been a lot of change, but you've also got some of the players who you had last season as well. So who would you say are like the main kind of marquee signings that were made you know, before the end of August?
I mean, what the thing Bolton have done is carried through the promotion-winning squad. That is the majority of the team right now. So they did make a few signings. What, you know, Josh Sheehan's probably the one that had catched the eyes, a Wales international, played at Newport for a good few seasons, and got League Two Team of the Year, all that sort of stuff. But he's a classy player, a very, very classy player, great to watch. And he knits in quite well in Ian Evans' midfield. Got, you know, a ball winner in MJ Williams backing him up. Sarcevic, who's a kind of box-to-box, more sort of bustling Kevin Nolan-esque type. And then you've got the ball winner, you've got the ball player in Sheehan. And in the last few years, probably the last decade, you know, creative midfielders have not had a space at Bolton. You know, to bring in Mr. Parkinson again, he signed Aaron Ostrom at one stage at Bolton, who was a lovely little ball player, number 10. And we all looked at like, where's he going to go? And sure enough, he never got a game, never got a kick under Parkinson, because there's just no sort of room for it. And I'd imagine Mr. McGeady's probably, you know, in the same sort of boat at your end, that, you know, he was basically in prison under Parky, and suddenly he gets let out. And lo and behold, there was a decent player in there all along. So, yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? It's just horses for courses for some managers. But yeah, Sheehan's probably the man. They signed Dapo Afolayan on a free transfer from West Ham on a 3-year deal. They'd had him on loan last season, and Dapo's been on fire. To be honest, he's absolutely fantastic. You know, got loads of skill, loads of pace. Suddenly found goals from out of nowhere as well. So I think a lot of people are looking at him, and probably Declan John as well. Just he will have, you know, Sunderland fans didn't get to see a sausage of him when he was there. Who knows?
Who is he?
I can tell you, he's quite a good player. I can tell you.
There was an urban myth going around Sunderland fans that he literally didn't exist. We signed him and we didn't see sight and sound of him. And then he was let go. But if he's turned up again, I saw he's made four appearances so far. Is he doing all right?
He's had a couple of injury issues, in all fairness. He had illness over the summer as well. So he's been kind of finding his way back. But I'm told he's back in training. He's got a good chance of playing on Saturday against Sunderland. So you may well finally get to see the lesser spotted Declan John. Who knows?
I can just see he's going to be one that comes back to haunt us. I can see it. I can see it now. Yeah. I want to go back a little bit, because I was at two games against Bolton Wanderers, two games that probably represent two of the kind of low points in Sunderland's journey. Mm. But I think were actually quite important in Bolton's journey as well. There was the game down at your place, the beginning of the season that was a COVID affected, the first COVID affected season. Was that 2019?
Right.
Where you had your points deduction. It was clear you weren't going to get out of that situation, but you'd managed to pull the squad together for the first time that season. You were stopped playing the kids, and you had some professionals, some full professionals in the lineup. And we came down expecting a 5-0 victory like everyone else had. And it was 1-1. And that, in some senses, was almost the start of the end for Jack Ross.
Right,
And resulted in Parky coming in. A few months later, we had a Boxing Day game at the Stadium of Light, which...
I remember that one well, yeah.
...was the catalyst for, the whole kind of Stuart Donald out campaign that we were involved in as Rook Report and across the whole fan base, which has eventually resulted in us getting new owners. So there's kind of some parallels and symmetries there that I think are really interesting. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about kind of... Obviously, you'd just been rescued at the point of that first game. And I don't think Sunderland fans in general and even I pay a little bit of attention to kind of what's going on around the kind of finances of the game, know who your owners are and where they came from and where the money's from and how they're doing. So I just wanted your perspective on that, really.
Yeah. So the first game, and he's going to consult it was September. So the Sunderland game would have been about 3 weeks after the takeover. And as you say, Keith Hill had signed 9 players in 48 hours before the deadline. So that team that played there was a very, very new team. That, I think, was the first point that they got under Keith Hill. And was it McGeady really late on? I think it was a penalty. I think.
Yeah. We were lucky to get out of that with a point.
So, yeah, they were kind of riding on the honeymoon period. It didn't last for long, believe me. But the owners had come in. Bolton had been 24 hours away from liquidation. It very nearly just hit the wall like Bury did. Mm-hmm. But the consortium called Football Ventures had been in the kind of perimeter for a good several months before that, trying to sign it. They tried to buy the club solvent before it went into administration. It all broke down about the Easter time. And then when the administration period came in, they were battling away, trying to get it done. Sharon Britton's kind of front and center. She's a London-based businesswoman and has, financial backers behind that. Michael James, who's a local guy, who's been heavily involved in the club beforehand, he was in there. Strangely enough, also one of the investors is Nick Mason from Pink Floyd, the drummer from Pink Floyd. So there's a few interesting names in there, but a lot of them stay in the background. Sharon's very much front and center. And I remember Phil Parkinson saying to me, he was just on the verge of resigning at Bolton because I think he just had enough. They asked him to stay on at Bolton and he kind of said, no, I think you need a fresh start. So I had a chat with Phil and he just said, listen, Sharon Britton is who you need at this football club. She's going to put her arms around it and give it a big hug, basically. So I was like, right, okay. He said, she is exactly what you need. And he's been 100% correct because she's just brought in a completely different persona to the club. It's suddenly a nice place to be. You know, we've had enough of bastards, to be completely honest with you, because we've had a fair few in our time. But we have now got, good people running the club and it kind of filters through. And there's suddenly, it's a nice place to be again. It's a good place to work. You go in and everybody's, smiling and happy. There's a bit more of a family kind of feel to the place. And that, it kicked off there. That was a tragic season because Bolton were never going to get past the minus 12 points that year. They were never going to do it. They were always going to go down. So it was a bit of a waste of time. Keith Hill was on a hiding to nothing. He had one less than 1 year in charge and, made his own mistakes in that. But it's funny. By the time we'd kind of come round to Boxing Day and the goalless draw we got at Stadium of Light, I'm bumping into Phil Parkinson again and this chorus of boos around every time anybody touched a ball. And I'm like, Phil, bloody hell, you go out of the frying pan into the fire. And he shakes his head and he's like, I just need to get my own people in. And he was really adamant that he was going to be able to turn it around by getting people in January. Obviously, it hasn't worked out that way. And, it's a shame it didn't, because I would have loved to have seen him take you guys up and get some success. But that was a strange old day.
One thing that changed as Phil Parkinson left Sunderland, and I don't think there's too many Sunderland fans, including myself, that were sorry to see him go, and Parky Ball, as we called it, and that very, very dull 5-3-2 formation, which is pretty formulaic, and sidelining, you know, flair players like McGeady, didn't go down particularly very well with the fan base. One thing that changed as he left, as the new ownership came in, as Lee Johnson came in, was the introduction of a sporting director, of Christian Speckman. Right. And I can see that you've recently been speaking to Chris Markham, who's performing a similar role at Bolton. And I was interested in the parallels, and interested because obviously I've heard you speak, and I've read your pieces about the style of play, and you've just said that the kind of like playing out from the back, that football philosophy that's possibly more attractive for, you know, developing players who you can sell up to the Premier League, and for loaning players down from the Premier League. And I was interested to learn from you what Chris had been saying to you, and, you know, if it is, you know, being led from him in terms of this like philosophy of playing good football.
It's funny because actually when Ian Everett first came in the summer of 2020, there was effectively a director of football already in place, and his name, bizarrely enough, was Tobias Phoenix. Sounds like a Bond villain, doesn't he? So this fella, you know, we didn't know a lot about him, and he didn't really give a lot away. He didn't really do too much press, but he was quite a divisive figure among the Bolton fans. It's fair to say that Keith Hill, who was the manager at the time, did not get on with him. He then was involved to a greater or lesser extent with the signings that Bolton made that summer when Ian Everett came in. And it didn't work at first. For the first 3 or 4 months, Bolton were tragic. They were terrible. They were 20th in League Two in February this year. So it was only the last few months they actually came together. And that actually coincided with some good business they did in January and the arrival of Chris Markham. Now, Chris Markham he's worked at Huddersfield Town. He's worked at the Football Association with the English national team. And I think he's been very good for Bolton. I think he's come in, he knows exactly what he's doing. They have got this kind of data-led kind of drive where they're trying to sign players based on the data they get, and that's informing their opinions. It's not making their opinions, but it's certainly giving, you know, the best possible chance of limiting wasted money type of stuff. They didn't like me using the term moneyball, I've got to be honest, when we first started talking about it. And I'm steering away from that now, because actually the more people I talk to about it, the lazier it becomes that you sort of mention that. But it's of that ilk that they are trying to sign players for cheap, and they are trying to sell them for high. Brentford have done a terrific job of that, of course, and now they're in the Premier League. So that is really where they're trying to emulate. They're trying to... they've got a Shadow B squad in the same sort of vein, and eventually they're going to kind of try and make that a bigger part of the club and get the conveyor belt going, get the academy going again, and you know, be self-sufficient. Now, whether that's a pipe dream or not in football, I don't know, especially if you're going to look to get into the Championship, whether you can ever be sustainable in the Championship, I don't know. But that's what they're aiming to do, I suppose.
I think, again, the Sunderland fans will be listening to this and hearing the parallels between kind of the way that Bolton are going about their business, the way that Sunderland are going about their business under the new ownership, maybe it's a thing in football that these new groups who are coming in to buy football clubs have learned you can't just kind of throw money at it. You can't just sign the pros who've been around the league for a few years. You have to be a bit smarter about it, and you have to do things in the right way and play football in the right way if you're going to get results. Now, so far the results this season for Bolton have been, I think, mixed is a really good description. It's won 3, drawn 3, lost 2, scored 14, which is quite a lot. This is up there with the best. Conceded 12, which is the third worst in the league. So yeah. Should we be expecting an open game on Saturday with plenty of end-to-end kind of basketball-style football, with both teams trying to play the beautiful game?
Guaranteed. It will absolutely, you're never going to get a defensive Bolton team at this point in time. They will attack. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. Whether that is to their detriment, maybe. Sometimes I think they are a little bit naive at times and will leave the back door open. But it's great to watch, and they do score goals. They, you know, they create a lot of chances. You know, look at all these brand new metrics. You've got the XGs and the X chances and the X this and the X that. They're right at the top of all the attacking statistics because they, you know, they do create good opportunities. They are an attractive team to watch. So yeah, I think so far you're right. It has been mixed. They've given a couple of points away, to be honest. I mean, you know, they let MK Dons back in the game. They should have beaten Burton Albion at home. Burton put 11/12 players behind the ball, you know, on a televised game. That was a bit of a nightmare, really.
We know about that. We had a similar experience and lost our best performance of the season. We lost to Burton. What it is about team, them, I don't know.
They're just a streaky team. But, you know, I think they're still getting to grips with League One football in a sense. So they're still learning. You know, a lot of this team, as I mentioned before, are exactly the same team that we're playing in League Two. So there's a few players that are learning on the job. But it's been terrific to watch them. And the fans have given them a bit more scope. And I think a lot of them appreciate, you know, they're not going to be leading from the front and streaking away with it. But I think over time, and if they can, you know, gradually improve as the season goes on, there's a degree of expectation out there that they can be, you know, there or thereabouts at the end of it, because, you know, there's a lot of continuity there, there's a lot of momentum and a lot of goodwill.
One result that really stood out, I think everyone noticed it in the league, was a 5-2 away victory at Ipswich Town. Looks on paper like a hell of a performance and a great game of football to watch. I know I heard you on your podcast talking about your 12.5-hour round trip down that A road that leads out to out to East Anglia.
A14. God bless it. Now the sooner they put Ipswich in the Air Divisie or whatever it is in Holland, the better. You know, let's regionalize football and get those guys playing in the Netherlands. That's where they need to be.
Well, they always used to have Dutch players as well, didn't they?
Well, that's because it's shorter to get there than it is to anywhere else. Probably short to get to Amsterdam. I mean, that game was a weird one because Ipswich looked like a team of strangers. I mean, they've made, I think it's something like 19 signings. It's absolutely mad what they've spent. And they hadn't got Morsey in the team at that point in time either, who I think will make a big difference to them in the end. But they looked like a team of strangers. It was a strange first half, 5 goals. It was literally the basketball that you described earlier. And then Bolton came out second half and just put the game to bed and scored a few, and you know, Portman Road turned into you know, a bit of an awkward place for them all of a sudden because the fans weren't very happy. But I think that will be the blueprint for what they try and do at Sunderland, really, because, you know, there will be expectation at your place, I'm absolutely sure of it, to beat Bolton at home. And if they can stay in touch and then do the same sort of number maybe in the second half as they did on Ipswich, then, you know, that would suit Bolton down to the ground.
Yeah, I mean, just to talk a little bit more about that game and kind of the aftermath, you say it got a bit toxic in the ground. A couple of your players received racial abuse on social media. Yeah. Was it Dabo Afalayan and Elias Kachuga? Both got racially abused on social media. That's something that's a hot topic across football. I mean, within Rugby Report, we're constantly, you know, campaigning for on issues of equality and things like that. I just wanted to get your take on it, and also, you know, what the club and the fan base and the media and the fanzines and things around the club have done in response, because, you know, it sounds like everyone rallied round, including Ipswich, to be fair.
Yeah, no, Ipswich were probably first on the scene as far as the Afalayan stuff that had happened during the game. They released a statement whilst I was still, you know, I don't think I'd even made Northamptonshire by the time I was up the motorway. The Kachunga stuff happened the kind of previous Tuesday on Instagram. That's been reported to the AFL and the police, and that's sort of ongoing. Afalayan was, as I say, on the Saturday. But I mean, it's horrible. It's social media, isn't it? It gives a very easy target for some of these footballers and for some of these morons to suddenly have an opinion that can hurt. The one thing I will say is that Bolton dealt with it very, very professionally, and the fans rallied round them you know, straight away. They were brilliant, absolutely fantastic, and you wouldn't expect anything less from them. Football in general, you know, is good at doing that, but it's actually how do you prevent it? It's the other end, really, isn't it? It's, you know, it, footballers should be allowed to live their lives in the same way as you and I do and have a Twitter account and not get abused. It shouldn't really be on them to reduce their, you know, visibility online. It should be on the social media companies, for my money, to stop these people having accounts or, you know, spawning different accounts and having, you know, 7-10 different stabs at it every single time. So, yeah, it's one of those. It's very difficult to police. It's very difficult to come up with an idea that suits everybody. But I think something's got to happen because, you know, sooner or later, you know, somebody really is going to, you know, suffer from it. And and you don't want it to go that far.
Yeah, I mean, we've a lot of Sunderland fans obviously watched the documentary that Anton Ferdinand, one of our previous players, did the other year, and that I think showed the kind of the insidious nature of and of the impact of racism on footballers and on how it can really destroy their career. I mean, I work for a trade union, and these are people working in their workplace, you know, and to hear that Dapo got abuse in the ground, that's you know, that's absolutely unbelievable, really. But unfortunately, it is something that's reared its head again in the last few years, and the players have obviously been protesting, you know, showing their protests in various different ways. I think it's for football fans as a community across clubs to kind of come together and say, you know, it's not acceptable in anyone's fan base, it's not acceptable in anyone's grounds, and we need to stay vigilant about it. I think it's really important that everyone understands that message. But to take things back, lighten things up again a little bit, although, you know, it's,
fair enough,
there's nothing more important. What do you think the Bolton Wanderers kind of ambition is this season? Because the way you've been describing it and the way that obviously we've seen them playing in highlights and stuff, they look like a team that could make the playoffs from our perspective, and I don't think anyone's complacent about the game on Saturday. So, has the manager said, you know, what his aim is, what his targets are, what the goals that have been set for him are?
I mean, Ian Everett is looking to finish first. That's and you know, Bolton fans who listen to this will be nodding along because he's one of these guys who doesn't hide any sort of ambition. He aimed, you know, I think it was the beginning of the last season in League Two. I think we had Bradford City in the first round of the League Cup, and we said, you know, realistically, you know, is this top of your priority? He says, yeah, I want to win it. I'm like, yeah, really? He's just one of these guys. It basically, if you're not in it to win it, what's the point in turning up? And that's, you know, you can call him deluded, you can call him whatever you like. That kind of, it spills into the team, and that kind of attitude goes through, and they all want to win, and it suddenly becomes contagious, and it suddenly becomes an attitude that they all show. And it's been good for Bolton, is the bottom line. I personally think if they could finish top 10, that would be a lovely step forward and then build from there. Of course, if you're finishing top 10, then why can't you go for the playoffs? It's you know, only a short hop skip. So, I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I still think they're probably a little bit light in the forward areas to have a proper tilt at promotion. But, you know, there's so many teams of similar ilk at the moment in League One. I don't see anybody necessarily running away with it. I think it'll be a fairly close fought thing until Christmas. So maybe we see where we are at that point in time.
Yeah, I think from our perspective in what is our fourth season in League One, this is probably the highest quality it's been so far, and most competitive, and probably the quality of football has gone up across the board, which is really nice to see, and you know, bodes well for English football in general, that you know, you're getting teams playing out from the back, you're getting really good football played from top to bottom in the pyramid, and that is now becoming the English style in some ways. So finally, we always ask for a score prediction. I'm always terrible at it, although I did guess that our women would have a score draw last week, which is I'm not a betting man, but if I'd had a better night, I could have won a couple of quid. So we expect you'll predict a Bolton win. So what do you think the scoreline is going to be come 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon?
Well, I am, I mean, seriously, notoriously bad at this sort of thing. So, you know, if I predict a 5-0 for Sunderland, then, you know, I definitely won't be right. But I think a score draw would do me, to be completely honest with you. I've been there, well, God knows how many times now. And I can't remember too many bad results. I can't remember too many defeats up that way. I do remember one time going there with Roy Keane in charge at Sunderland. And I think it was a heavy scoreline. It might have been 4-1, 4-0, 4-1, something like that. And one of the guys, one of the punters comes up to me, must have mistaken me for a Sunderland journalist and had a proper go in my ear. He was like, I hope you're right in this, blah, blah, blah. I won't say the exact words he used, but let's say he had strong opinions on whether Roy Keane should stay in a job. So, you know, I can't remember too many bad memories up there. So I'll err on the side of caution and say a draw, but I've got a sneaky suspicion that there's going to be goals in there at least.
Yeah, I mean, the score that keeps coming into my mind is like something like 4-2. We've got, to us, of course, but we've just not been putting away our chances, and we've all been saying to each other, you know, it's got to come at some point.
Mm.
And at one point, we're going to start sticking them away. So I think we can hear my dog barking in the background.
There might That's a be score a good... prediction that you might want to count them.
Absolutely, it could be a sign. Just want to thank you for your time this evening, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure. We've got a bit of a message for Sunderland fans and for Bolton fans. There's going to be a collection at the Stadium of Light, at the Beacon of Light, which is the centre next door to the Stadium of Light, for the Sunderland and Durham Food Bank and the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, who are our partners at Roker Report, this Saturday from 12 till 3. You can bring a bag of food down for the food bank. They are looking for some specific things, which is UHT milk, fruit juice, sponge puddings, biscuits, jams, tinned pies, tuna, suet pudding, canned chili, tinned meats and tinned mixed veg. The food bank and the soup kitchen are amazing charities. They do fantastic work. They shouldn't have to do what they do, but they're doing what they do despite everything, and they've been doing it all the way through the pandemic. And us amongst Sunderland fans, and I'm sure it's the same amongst Bolton and other fans around the country, you know, we all stick together and we all try to do our best for the people in our communities. So, that's there. There'll be a collection there. I think there might also be little collections elsewhere as well. We'll see. Watch out for that on social media. There'll be plenty of information about exactly where to go and some more details on that coming out, I think, from the club in the next couple of days. But thanks again, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure, and good luck for the rest of the season, if not Saturday.
No problem at all. But yes, I'll see you up there, and hopefully my lucky streak continues.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. All right.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.